usually you're telling the story, I think. So I had just moved to England to do a master's. So I was completely, you know, new place, new people, new house. I was really over full of all these impressions. And then you came up. You were like the only one who wasn't a student at the student party, because you lived in London and I was in York.
I came for the weekend to visit a friend of mine who had just started her master's in York, and she had met you.
Yeah, once. You know how when you're a student, you meet and you think, is this going to be a friend? And this Julie was a really... she was like, ooh, she's nice. Anyway, and...
Julie told me she'd met one person that she'd had a proper conversation with.
Yeah.
And that was you. And so we met in a student bar.
And she said something like, yes, but just because she got short hair, it doesn't mean she's gay.
And I was like, oh, she's gay. Don't you worry about that.
So there was a student. So I'd been there for a week, I think, and there was a student party. And I saw you across the room. And I think there was something about going abroad. And I just thought, ooh, I'll go and talk to her. And I because you were with Julie. And I thought, I know Julie a little bit. But I saw you and I thought, I'm going to go and talk to you.
So you're feeling braver than usual?
Yes, there's something about going abroad and just, I think I was quite open.
Yeah.
Open to meeting people. And,
Then I ditched poor Julie and spent all night chatting to you.
We didn't talk to anyone else that evening. And then we...
Yeah, it was...
And then I suddenly felt utterly, that evening, I was so overwhelmed, but I got your phone number. I think you said, Julie's having a party afterwards, do you want to come? And I was like, I can't really cope, but let me have your phone number.
I know, so ran off.
I thought that was terribly brave to get your phone number, but you just thought I ran off.
But then we met up the next day and we went for a very kind of awkward walk.
Yes, it was awkward. And I found that I was 26. And when you said that you were 22, I was like, oh my God, she's only 22.
Such a big age gap.
Such a big age gap. At the time, it seemed like, this is not possible. And then...
Yeah, I thought you were terribly old.
Yeah. And then we spent the afternoon together and that... It was a bit... It was quite awkward and...
Yeah.
And there was something about... We talked about Bob Dylan. I don't know why I remember that, but... You said something about Bob Dylan and you said it in the English way and I would have said it in the Swedish way, so I didn't hear it. So you said, what? You don't know who Bob Dylan is? And I was like, no, but I do! I do! So it was all these kind of tensions and, what are we doing? And then...
I remember you invited me back to your room for coffee.
Yeah.
And you had to look up how to make instant coffee because you'd never made it before, which I thought was very sweet.
Yes, we were walking across this campus, in your campus, and we were looking for a cafe, and there are no cafes. So, and my little horrible student room, which is like literally a bed, is like a shoebox, a bed, and that's it.
So an instant coffee.
An instant coffee, and I thought, I can't take her for instant coffee. But we did in the end, and then... And then I think we said goodbye, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it was feeling a bit awkward.
Yeah, it was all very strange.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember, there was something about... I asked if you wanted to come for a drink that night and you didn't come out or something.
Yeah, one of my new flatmates was... She had asked me if I wanted to watch a film with her. So I had said yes, I think, already.
Oh, yeah, so I thought you were playing hard to get.
Yeah.
I think that was it.
So I went in and I forgot my phone. So I went in and watched that film and then came out. And I think I had a text from you, maybe, to say that you would I want to come out for a drink?
Yeah.
And I texted back and I said, good night. Good night, ? Did you have a good night? But you were like...
Yeah, so our whole relationship was basically misunderstanding this text. Because it was about 10 at night, and I thought she was saying, are we saying goodnight, ? Or not? So I showed up at her room.
You got this stage, didn't
you?
Yeah.
I was involved.
Seconds later, I got this phone call, so it was this, and I was like, where are you? And you were saying, I'm outside your door.
I know, I was brave.
And then you came in, and I think you said, what are we doing?
Yeah, the rest was history.
I said, I don't know. And then we kissed.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. How did we decide? I think my research... So that year, I started doing research about lesbian couples having babies together. And there wasn't something that I was particularly knowing that I wanted to do, and I don't know that you did. I can't really remember if that was in the frame.
I don't know that we really talked, you know, because we were quite newly together then.
Yeah. So it wasn't really...
And it wasn't till we'd been together 7 years or something before we...
Before we actually...
Started thinking about having a baby ourselves.
Yeah, that's probably right. So it really took a while. But in the meantime, I was doing all this research about lesbian couples and how they have babies and the kind of the ins and outs of donor insemination and so on. So I knew an awful lot about things going wrong and also things going really well. And then I think I got older, and at about 31 maybe, so 5 years in, I was starting to say, I think I started to talk about having a baby, and you were a bit...
And I was a bit more like, in 2 years' time. And everything, it was always in 2 years' time, wasn't
it? Yeah, so it was this kind of, maybe, see.
I was like, that's a nice idea, in a couple of years.
And then I got a permanent job. And I think that night, I was like, I'm having a baby. And luckily, I could kind of persuade you.
Yeah, I was like, fair enough.
I think I did a little, it wasn't exactly that we were on exactly the same page at that stage.
Yeah, I think it wasn't exactly persuading, but it was more that you were definitely ready.
Yeah.
And I was still in the kind of, sooner or later kind of phase.
Yeah. And then we had, from years back, your sister knew someone who had said 10 years ago or something that he might be a sperm donor. So we tried him. We contacted him. He lived in London. And it started off, I mean, he was always really nice, but he went from being this kind of, I'm happy to do that. You live over, you know, you live in the north, I live in the south, and I don't want to be involved, blah, blah, blah. And then
he kind of thought about the reality of it.
Yeah, the reality, I think, hit him. So within a month, he just said, I can't do it, I'm really sorry. And then... I had, through my work then, I knew about lots of websites. And because it's really expensive to go to a clinic, it's thousands of pounds. And we thought, we're not infertile, we probably don't need a clinic. Let's see if we can find a guy who isn't really creepy and horrible on one of these websites.
And there were definitely some that were.
Yeah, because I had known then, because I talked to loads of lesbian couples, I'd known some that really, really needed to be more careful. And I'd known some that had worked so nicely and really well. And this was the first guy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the first guy we talked to. Probably shouldn't use his name.
No,
but
that's true.
Without asking him. But
yeah.
And he was just really nice, really straightforward. He'd done it before, so it wasn't a big issue.
And he'd done all the thinking. I think that was the difference with the guy. We contacted him and he then had to do all the thinking. But this guy we found online had done all the thinking and decided he wanted to do it. And he was really chilled about it. He was like, he didn't want to be an involved dad, but he was kind of chilled about us seeing him twice a year, or if we didn't want to do that, he was happy with that. It was kind of up to us.
So he was happy for us to kind of have contact, you know, for the kid to know him or not know him, or, you know, he was very... And he was just, I mean, he was just amazingly selfless, wasn't he? He just... just wanted to help us, and he never bothered us for more involvement or less. Or,
and it's like throughout the process, and now that we have done it again, he's never pushed anything or been the one to contact us first.
It's just a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
Which, you know, and it's a pretty awkward process to do. So like the first time we met up for an insemination, you know, with him, we met up in a hotel room. It was like, it was off the A1. It was one of those motorway hotel rooms. It was the most...
There wasn't... You realise that when you do the donor insemination, you realise all these things that you need that you don't normally think about. So this hotel didn't have a bar. So we were like, well, where do we wait? There's nowhere to wait for him to masturbate, and then for us to go in and it was so
yeah, pretty seedy. Really.
Like, we wanted to like have a chat beforehand, other than in the bedroom, and it's like we don't want to be in this bedroom with this man. Really not.
Just because we didn't, I mean, I think it'd be much less of an issue now, but we didn't know him at the time.
No.
And you know, we didn't know if he was going to turn out to be weird or difficult. Or
yeah, or I'd heard of donors saying, "Oh, I'm only going to do it if I have sex with you." You know, so turning up, that first time was like, is this the time when we find out that we're going to have to find another donor? Don't know. But luckily, he was fine.
He was just really nice, really straightforward, made it easy.
Yeah, and with Iris, it only took twice. And then I was pregnant, and we didn't have to do it again.
And then with the second time, it took quite a lot longer, six or seven times?
Yeah.
And that felt hard to keep it, you know, it's a lot of effort, and you know, you have to go away, you have to drive a couple of hours to get there,
the logistics, you don't know when, which day am I lecturing that day, you have to drive over an hour and a half,
you've got the hotel, a three-year-old with you.
Like, really, yeah, that was really hard. But also just that you're not in control, are you? You can, for pregnant, after one time, it might take you a year, and after 6 months, if you knew that this will take 6 months, but then you will be pregnant, that's kind of fine. But I think because I've done so much work around couples are infertile, I was like, okay, we've done 6 months. A year down the line, is, you know, what do we do then? Is this ever going to happen? I found you were much better at bearing.
You were pretty twitchy about that, weren't you?
I was twitchy. I was really twitchy. It was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the uncertainty. Yeah. The process around childbirth was quite weird in that sense, because obviously, like, you think midwives in Hefton Bridge have quite a lot of experience of lesbian couples, but they were really not on board. They were dismissive. Yeah, I remember when we turned up in the antenatal appointments, and you turned up, and the second, oh no, there was like once when I went on my own, and she said, oh, you don't have your bodyguard with you today. And I was like, what, aren't we supposed to like encourage couples to come? Yeah,
it was quite strange.
And that same woman, after I'd given birth and she came here, she made this bizarre comment about something about me being Swedish, and she said, oh yeah, Sweden, good country, no pufters there. And it was like,
I think
what?
She was just, she was kind of anxious and therefore said the wrong thing or something.
It was like, and also, you know, they, so because we both were breastfeeding, and you, when she walked in through the room, Dis was breastfeeding, and she essentially snatched Iris out of your arms in order to say, I want to see the mummy's latch.
So she wanted to check.
So there was no,
but she didn't check my latch.
There was no sort of celebration of the fact that we were both breastfeeding, which it could have been. Instead, we were just this uphill kind of, we want to do this, can someone help us? No. And you were told by this breastfeeding expert, there was like, you were a dangerous imposter to the mummy baby unit.
That was the feeling.
Yeah.
So it was all quite difficult, because I had heard from friends and things that you can induce lactation.
Sweden. Yeah.
So that you, both mums can breastfeed. And, you know, I really wanted to do that, because I really wanted to be able to share it as much as possible, and to, I suppose, be really engaged with the new baby and be a mum. And I think it was very difficult before we had Iris, because there was nothing in society telling me that you could be two mums, that, you know, it wouldn't be a mum and an extra mum, but it would be two mums, you know. And it felt, you know, it felt really important to me, but also very difficult, you know. I think the world of childbirth and pregnancy is very heterosexual and very,
and very the mother.
Yeah. And yes, I've, you know, I found it quite alienating. It was quite hard for me to carve out a role as mother, as another mother.
I think it probably is. But there is a role for fathers in this society. But yeah. For anyone.
So it was quite difficult, and there wasn't really any support with the breastfeeding. No one had heard of it.
No.
But not just they hadn't heard of it, but lots of midwives were quite resistant. They were quite,
but quite the opposite.
Thought that
we
would get
told,
in the way of Petra's breastfeeding. And
we were told outright that no one, even if you have to bottle feed the baby, no one but the mother should do that for the first 2 months of the baby's life. So And you think of the mental health of women who don't sleep. It's like, why not share it if you can? It was, and that was like, that was the breastfeeding guru in the area. So at which point I called an LGBT clinic in Stockholm that I knew of, like a midwifery clinic for LGBT. And they said, of course you can do this. Many people do this. This is, you know, because you came up with the phone with that midwifery, that lactation expert. And we were like, because you're not, you have to trust these people. And she was telling us that we were doing something horrible. And we thought, no, but we're doing something really good. But if someone, and she was like, you do want what's best for this baby, don't you? You know,
there's
that
a
real
lot
kind
of pressure.
Moral, yeah. So that was a bit of a crisis actually before in trying to induce lactation. And
in retrospect, you know, having pushed ahead with it, it was the best thing for both of us and for Iris. It was amazing. You know, that right from the beginning we could share all the nights. Petra could get half a night's sleep. I could get half a night's sleep. Yeah. I just feel like we had such a good start with Iris because we could both do it, and it was so everything was much easier, wasn't it? And it was lovely. It was
magic,
no problem.
No, and this magic moment, the first night that when we came home from hospital, and my milk hadn't come in, and she was feeding and feeding and feeding for hours, and I couldn't fill her up because my milk hadn't come in, and I went and woke you up, and you, because you had induced lactation, you had milk. So Iris was full and went to sleep.
She just fed for 10 minutes and then went to sleep. And
it was just magic. You were happy, I was happy, she was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.